In the world of chronic illness, some conversations with children are just downright difficult. Finding the right words and the fear of saying the wrong ones might just freeze you in your tracks before you even get started. But what if you didn't have to have all the words? Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Wondercast is brought to you by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care. Today we are joined by Sarah Olscher, founder of Mighty and Bright, and Jenny Rogers, child life specialist with Mayo Clinic, Arizona. Both incredible authors collaborating on a series of children's books that help navigate the difficult conversations of illness, so that you don't have to go at it alone. This is Jenny and Sarah. So I'll start by just having you guys introduce yourself. So who would like to go first? Sarah. Okay, perfect. I'll say, this is Sarah.
Wow, that's really specific.
I know. And then you get to just go. Yeah. Oh, this is Sarah.
We're doing great, guys.
We're doing great.
Okay. All right. Hi, everybody. I'm really glad to be here. This is very exciting. I am a mom. My daughter is in freshman in high school now, but my history is basically that I was diagnosed with cancer when she was six. So I've really been through the trenches of this whole thing, and I know where you are. So I'm really excited to be here and chat with you guys today.
I'm so glad to be here as well. And I'm so glad to partner with not only Sarah, but Wonders and Worries. I have had the privilege of being a child life specialist for a little over 30 years and come alongside families. I am no expert, but I can share what has worked for some families and what's not worked for some families and be able to make the next person's journey lighter. So glad to be here.
I would disagree, by the way. I think that Jenny is a super expert. She's just very modest.
And humble. Yes. Well, we're delighted to have you both here today, especially as we talk about the incredible resources that books can be for families navigating chronic illness. You guys are both published authors and have created these incredible resources to help support families in their illness journey. I would love for you both to just, and you can go in any order, but to just talk about what benefits or even potential reach do you feel that books can provide for kids in helping them understand illness in ways that just conversation can't?
I think one of the things, as somebody who went through this myself, it's like when something really hard happens, it's really hard to know where to start as a parent. And I think a lot of us reach for books because there's people behind them, hopefully, who know what they're doing and know what they're talking about and can help kind of frame a conversation that you don't know how to have yourself. So when I was first diagnosed, I reached out to my local librarian. I downloaded a bunch of things on Amazon. I was just looking for something that could serve as kind of a structure or a foundation for having a hard conversation that I just didn't know where to start from. And so I think for me, at least as a parent, that's a really big benefit, is just to kind of like give you a place to start.
And I think what I would say is, being on the other side of being in the hospital setting and meeting families who are just so overwhelmed with exactly what Sarah says of where do I start, and being able to have that conversation with them that meets their unique family's needs, but then for them to be able to have something tangible that they can then go home with, gives them the extra encouragement that they can do this and have this hard conversation. And I think for kids, what I think helps too is having the illustration, because the first thing their eye will be drawn to is the illustration. And then the words back up what they're seeing that helps them kind of understand that hard concept in a more friendly way.
And Jenny, with books, have you found any parents that have been resistant to using books that you've worked with in your practice?
At times, I think it's hard because there's so many books out there that are specific to a unique situation. So it might be a specific age or sex of a child or a specific diagnosis. And what can be difficult is if your personal situation doesn't line up exactly with what is in the book, you kind of get stuck and you wonder, should I keep going on, or is this going to raise other questions? And so that's really what kind of motivated Sarah and I to partner, was to make something that could be adaptable to anybody in any situation and give them that freedom to be able to add whatever treatment or whatever situation they were in within a basic foundation.
I would love it if you don't mind taking a minute to talk about the project that y'all collaborated on.
So my first book was specifically about cancer. It applied to all different kinds of cancer, and it's called What Happens When Someone I Love Has Cancer. And it's used in children's hospitals across the country. And Jenny reached out to me and she said, hey, you know, I love this book. I have a bunch of other books that are also about emotions and like the nervous system and coping. And she reached out to me and she said, hey, do you have any books about anticipatory grief? Because we have a lot of kids who have parents that are dying and they don't know how to approach this topic. So she and I basically met a few times and talked about it and realized that actually that it wasn't the only issue. The other issue is when people are living with chronic illness and it's not just like, oh, you know, I have fibromyalgia or, oh, I have, you know, metastatic cancer. It could be, you know, hey, I actually have recovered from cancer treatment, but I am dealing with these side effects that make it so that like, I'm just like not operating the same way other parents are. And as soon as we started talking about that, I realized, hey, like this is actually my life right now, you know, and the book that we did first was called What Happens When Someone I Love Doesn't Feel Good. And it's basically, you know, parts of it were inspired by my own experience with my daughter going to a birthday party where they were going to walk to a park in 100 degree heat, have a picnic, everybody, including the parents, were going to play tag. And then after that, we were going to walk back to the kids' house. And then we were going to go to the arcade where we were going to play games. And then we were going to play laser tag. And then we were going to have a pizza party. And then we were going to go home. And I was like, I am 2 years post-treatment at this point, and I am exhausted. And the whole spoon theory thing of you only have so much energy to spend in a day is something I've actually had a conversation with my child about. And so when I was sitting on the sidelines at the park, she said, Mom, I was sad that you couldn't play tag, but I knew that you were saving your energy for laser tag. And so when Jenny and I are having this conversation, I was like, this is a resource that 100% we have to create, because not only are people who, you know, maybe had, you know, an early stage cancer and are recovered, I say that in quotes, but there's tons of parents that are living with metastatic illness and don't know how to explain this to their kids. And so that was our first book.
I love that. And I think that they're just even the families, especially through Wonders and Worries I've served for years. I mean, cancer for sure, heart disease, yes, those are big things. But for these little minds, it's the day-to-day and the everyday impact on their parents' ability to be in their everyday that they feel the most. And so I think having that resource is phenomenal.
Yeah, we try to make it very applicable with like actionable things you can do. So one of the biggest parts that I've gotten feedback that parents love is the whole idea of having a plan A and a plan B. And our parent guide at the end gives an explanation, like actual examples of how you can create a plan A and a plan B and really just prepare your kids. So, you know, if I feel great, we're going to go to the park and we're going to play games. If I don't feel great, our plan B is we're going to stay home and we're going to play board games, you know, so that they actually have something actionable that they can implement in their day to day that's going to help.
And I think I would add the other thing that having a book to express these concepts to kids, it helps normalizes the situation for them. And so I think parents sometimes get really worried of, oh my gosh, I'm denying something of my child's ability to experience childhood by not doing these things with them. And what we want to say is, no, you're not denying them. This is providing them an experience. It's just helping reframe it in a different way. And it's not bad and it's not worse. It's just different. And your child has nothing else to compare it to. So you're not denying them. This is their life and they accept you for who you are and where you're at in this time. And we just want to help people just understand more that that's okay to be in that spot. You don't have to be the parent that did the laser tag and the park and all the things. You're still an amazing parent, even if you can't do all those things.
And I think a lot of times parents get also worked up or held up and not feeling like they have the words. So I love that these books can also serve as a guide. You are helping give the words to these parents to talk about their own illness. And I love that that is age appropriate and at a level that is not too heavy for a child to carry. I think you both were very intentional with the wordings that you've chosen. I feel like in our practice, we get a lot of great reception from using the book.
That's great. Yeah, we tried to. I'm really into science because kids can understand it if it's just explained in a certain way. And so we try to make the base of it science that can apply to any kind of illness. And then in the back, in the parent guide, we have child-friendly ways to explain all kinds of illnesses, like anything that we could think of, from ALS to cancer to depression, so that parents can explain whatever is unique to their family in a way that their kids can actually process and understand.
Now, with the parent guide, have you gotten a lot of reception back from parents? I love that the book has this towards the back so that they're able to access just common themes and support. Have you found you've gotten lots of feedback from that?
We have, and it's been positive because what they appreciate about it is that it's not all actually in the book. Sometimes you'll see resources that have the child's language and literature and illustration, but then there's a little box at the bottom of the page that says, for parents, read this part. Well, I don't know about you guys, but my kid's going to read the parent part. And then they're going to be wondering if I'm, you know, they lovingly say, don't child life me, mom, you know, because they catch on to me and they know what I'm doing. And so I appreciate that it's very intentional and it's at the back, and it's a choice if a parent wants to look at that or not, and that they can read it in their own time. And one of the things I just love about Sarah is how she writes it, not in a way of here is the step-by-step what you need to do if you're going to be a good parent. She writes it in a way of, wow, this is hard. And here's some things to think about, and don't overthink it, and try this. And so it's very much like having a conversation with Sarah and I when you read this document versus a have to, which I appreciate.
Bibliotherapy is a term that I feel like our medical community uses a lot to explain to families the resources available to them, but it can kind of sound daunting. How would you explain the use of these books to families? And are there any ages that you feel books aren't a resource for, or it doesn't seem to work best with in terms of development?
I think what I would say is what we know about development is that typically kids under the age of 12 are going to be concrete thinkers, meaning they're going to understand concepts based on what they can see, hear, and experience. So when we just talk to them about concepts, they don't know how to materialize that because they often don't have an understanding of internal body processes. So for instance, I had a five-year-old the other day tell me that he had two hearts. And I said, really? How do you know? And he said, well, you listen to this one, and pointed to his chest. And he goes, and then you listen to that one. And he pointed to his back. And I thought, gosh, what a great way to really illustrate how kids understand some things. He knew he had a heart, but he didn't understand the whole concept. And so there's misconceptions that occur. So anytime we can show drawings or images that put those concepts into things that they can look at, it's going to help them process it better. So that's where I think bibliotherapy comes in, because they can actually see what you're describing to be able to integrate the concepts together between the illustration and the words. And I think what I'd say about the age groups is these books are targeted for really 4 to maybe 10, 11-year-olds. But what I've used with them recently is I've had young adolescents. I've asked them to read them to a sibling. And I've had some real success with that, because if you tell your teenager, hey, can you sit down and read this picture book? They're going to be like, no. But if you give them the opportunity to use it in a way to help their siblings, and then they get the information as well. I've had some parents come back to me and say, oh, my teen said they didn't know this and they didn't realize it until they read this in this way. That's kind of a workaround to bring them into.
Honestly, that's some of my favorite advice that Jenny has ever given me. I have told that to so many parents, and they're like, I never would have thought about this. I mean, parents are learning things from our books. I have people reaching out to me. I have a book called Don't Believe Everything You Think, and it's about kind of like cognitive distortions and the lies that we tell ourselves in our brains. I get so many emails from parents that are like, I read this to my child and realized I needed it myself. So anything you can do to like trick a teenager into reading a picture book is fabulous.
Absolutely. And I feel like how many times, Jenny, I'm sure with you too, have you been working with a child in the hospital and they're big bodies and people are thinking that they've surely had surgery before. They have definitely had an IV before. I've worked with 18-year-olds that have never had an IV before. And they're like, wait, what's happening? And you're right. Just the information, I feel like, can be totally adaptable. One of the things at Wonders and Worries that we've also encouraged families that has been somewhat helpful is ask the parent to read through the book yourself first. And that is something I always encourage our families to do, is whenever you're going to sit down, either reading it online or listening to it together as a family, to preview it first. And if it's an actual tangible copy of a book, I've paperclipped pages together if they didn't apply, or I have, you know, just skipped whole sections if I had a child that I knew was going to get hung up on something that didn't really apply to their part of the story. Anything else advice-wise that you would have for families like that?
That's the same advice that I give parents.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so what individual projects have you guys been working on as well with your books?
You go first.
Well, so the last project that we worked on together was a book about the anticipatory grief, which was what Jenny originally reached out to me about, which is what happens when someone I love can't get better. And that book goes into life cycle and hospice and explains, you know, when someone is going to die really soon, how do we have that conversation and explain to kids what's going on? So that is our most recent book. And it was a lot. It was hard to figure out how to have this conversation in a way that didn't bring, that was very factual, but gentle. And how do we talk about death? And specifically, how do I illustrate death in a way that isn't scary or isn't overly sad? And so that really was a huge project, I think, for both of us. So that is the most recent one. And as far as future ones right now, just taking a little break.
That one sat with you for a bit. Mm, yes,
it did.
Well, and I think a big reason of why we wanted to do it also is because there is a lot of literature out there. There's a lot of information for kids on grief. So after an actual loss, but there's nothing that really helps you in that space between the time when you know things are not going the way you want them to go, and when end of life happens. And that space can be a very big one. It can actually be a year to 2 years. And that's a long time for a child to not really understand what's going on. And then everything happened all at once. What we know about children and how they cope is that when they get information all at once at the same time, it creates a lot more distress and makes it a lot harder for them to cope. But when we can break it up into small pieces and allow them to take those bits of information over time and walk together as a family through the hard part, it allows them that processing. So I'll hear a lot of parents say, well, I don't want to tell them what's going to happen or where things are going because I don't want to rob them of their childhood or I don't want to make them sad. And I think what I would lovingly say is that we can't take the sad away. The sad is going to happen, but we can walk through it together, be sad together, cope together, and do it as a family instead of everybody in individual silos. Because when we don't talk about it and we don't plant those seeds to get those conversations going, we all try to protect each other. So parents don't want to say anything to the kids. The kids don't want to say anything to the parents when often everybody knows what's going on, but they don't want to bring it up. So that was really kind of our goal with that one, is not to say, gosh, here's a really amazing way to talk about your dying. It's really more to just gently ease them into, hey, sometimes medicine works and sometimes it doesn't. And when it doesn't, this is what happens. And then the rest of the book is all about coping and legacy, and how do we capture who you are as a person? Because that's what's important. Who are you in this child's life? Not what's happening in that exact situation. So while we do talk about preparing for end of life, it's a very small part of the book, and the rest of it really focuses on coping with that and making that connection between parent and child.
I'm honestly so proud of that book. I just feel like we worked really hard to really incorporate all of the things that Jenny just said and to really come up with something that's really beautiful based on what Jenny has experienced in her practice as far as what it is that's important to parents, you know, at the end, what it is that they want their kids to know. And then, you know, from my own perspective and speaking to parents, because I do public speaking about this, and also just support groups, is parents don't know how to have the conversation. And if they don't know how to have the conversation, they just won't have it. And so if they don't have it, any pieces of this, you know, it leaves your kids in a position that you probably don't want to leave them in. And so what I would say is definitely look at it, like get it, look at it, absorb it for yourself, you know, because it can feel really scary. And just to kind of like walk yourself through it first, like as we were talking about earlier, to read it first yourself, I think you'll find that you feel more comfortable having some of these hard conversations because now you have a starting point for them.
I think also just having any of these difficult conversations, I think it's important to read through it and recognize what are my triggers? Like what of this is going to be too hard for me to talk through by myself? And then have a plan, have that safety plan for when I start feeling emotional, I don't want to melt down in front of my kids maybe. So I'm going to read to this point on the first night. And then maybe we're going to come back and read another couple pages together and dad's going to be a part of it or grandma or somebody else so that you don't have to be the emotional stronghold. I think Sarah's right. If you don't read through it, you're not going to talk about it. And then what I know Jenny has seen in her practice too is you miss out on legacy. And legacy is that chapter that happens after everyone knows the truth. And everyone is talking about the truth, then you get this special gift that is legacy that you don't get if you don't walk through that hard conversation first. Of the writing process, what has been your favorite part, Sarah?
Honestly, I don't work with other people on my books. I really don't. And Jenny's special and she's honest and getting to know her, it to me has been a true honor. What she does is absolutely incredible. And the way that she talks to parents and the way that she does her work is truly one of the most inspiring things that I've ever had the honor of doing.
I don't know what to say after that.
That's so lovely.
You know, my favorite part and what I love so much about Sarah, there's so many things I love about her, but how she has these little tiny bits of humor that she interjects into her book. And so it's just real subtle. It's kind of like when you watch a Pixar movie. It's for the kids, but there's things in there the adults chuckle at. And that's what I love about her books. And almost every family comments on the page that has a drawing of the inside of the body and it shows organs and a little description. And then down in the corner, there's this little picture of Stuart, who is the giraffe character in her book. And it describes his insides as fluffy or stuffing. I can't remember. Fluffy or stuffing. And every single time we get to that page, every kid points that out. Like, isn't this awesome that she described what's inside him too?
It's like a little unicorn. I know we call that the little unicorns in a book.
Yeah. So I would have to say my favorite part of doing this book is just seeing her illustrations bring the concept to life without being really direct. I mean, we have organs talking to each other in the book. That's not something you would normally see is, you know, organs talking to each other, but it really kind of makes you, it gives you that break from the hard and just step back and use humor and laughter as a little bit to kind of get through that part. And so that's my favorite part for sure.
How can families best access your work? What do you find is the best way for them to get their hands on it?
basically Amazon, I think, where everybody goes to find the things. You know, that's where you can most easily find it. You can find all of the links at on my personal website, which is sarahulscher.com. So it will take you to all of the Amazon links, or you can buy them directly through us. And also we have bulk discounts, you know, big organizations that want to purchase a lot of them, because we want to see these in the hands of as many people as can possibly get them.
And you also have the option if you want to do a download or if you want the actual book.
Oh, that's great. And does the download show the pictures as well if they were going through the downloaded version?
Yes. Yes, it's the exact same thing. It just allows you to have it on a tablet versus waiting for the printed book.
Perfect. Now, what exciting new things are you looking forward to with any of your publications, either that you currently have out or that you're formulating and thinking of creating?
I think the next thing I'm thinking to do is creating a whole bunch of resources to explain various diseases, where it's the only thing about the book is just like, what is this thing? So, you know, what is Alzheimer's disease? What is depression? What is ALS? What is, you know, heart attack? All of these things. Because that first step of explaining, you know, what cancer is, the number of parents that have come to me and said, I have colon cancer. I would never have known how to explain this from a scientific point of view. There's so many things that people are going through and they have no idea how to explain it to a kid.
I think for me, this has sparked me to say, okay, now the next step is to get this information and this ability to be comfortable with having these hard conversations into the hands of healthcare professionals. Because when you go to a big children's hospital, you might have the resources of Child Life, but Child Life isn't always available everywhere. And so I feel super passionate about everybody feeling equipped to at least get a parent over that first hump. Like, here's some things, focus on these three things so that they can get through that part and feel like they can do it. Because at the end of the day, parents can do it. They just need a little encouragement to remind them that they do know their kid and they do know how to handle this.
I think I'd just like to expand on what Jenny just said, which is you can do this. It doesn't have to be a one and done conversation. It should be an ongoing conversation. So to put all this pressure on yourself to do it perfectly the first time, try and let that go and remember that, you know, you can always come back later and say, oh, you know, I wish I would have said this, or I wish I would have said this, or do you have any questions about what we talked about the other day? You know, you don't have to feel like you can have to get it perfect the first time, so you can take some of the pressure off.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.